Yeah, so like they tax the first, don't quote me on the exact numbers, but the first, like, call it 30 grand US or so, is taxed at like 40%, and then it goes up from there, and the next bracket's like 60%, then 80%. I think that the top tax bracket for cars is something like 140%, right? So if you buy, if you wanted to buy like a Cayenne,
wait, with no fairly, with no brake for EV, it's the same for EV.
EVs do get a brake. It's a weird kind of brake system, but it's something like you get a small brake up front, I think, and then the real thing is if you have an old gas car, any gas car, and you sort of like decommission that gas car when you buy an electric car, they will wipe off like 30, 40 grand USD worth of taxes, something like that.
Wait, what? 30 to 40 grand USD worth of taxes?
Yeah. Like the taxes are really high. Like if you buy a Cayenne here, it'll be like a regular Cayenne,
which is a gas car,
like a gas Cayenne. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be like what, maybe 200,000 US, something like that, all in.
Oh my god, with taxes.
Yeah, with the taxes. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what like a Cayenne EV would be.
Wait, but so is just driving a car kind of a flex in Hong Kong then? Because that's crazy.
On some level, I think it is, but I think like a lot of what I would consider fairly like, I don't know what middle class is in Hong Kong, but I think like normie upper middle class families in Hong Kong, a lot of them are going to have a car anyway, right? Mm. It won't be like a super fancy
proposition.
Car.
Like, it's crazy.
It
like,
is an expensive proposition. It really is.
I mean, buying the damn thing, parking, I'm guessing, is not cheap.
Parking
and
is
then
not
you're
cheap.
Saying gas is like $12 a gallon, 12 USD a gallon.
Something like that, yeah. Maybe 10, I don't know.
See, like, what's I was saying before, this is why Chinese EVs are going to take over, because in America, we don't understand. Parking is free and plentiful. Cars are cheap. I mean, relatively cheap, because like we don't really have monster taxes.
You don't have monster taxes on it. Yeah. Like, you might have like a 5% sales tax or something, right? Like, it's nothing.
Yeah. And then only Trump has threatened that with his tariffs. But we make a ton of cars like inside the U.S. And gas is so fucking cheap here. It's still hovering just above $3 right now. It's broken under $3 in a couple places. But
yeah,
like to us, like driving's not expensive, but you tack on all that shit, and it starts to. I can understand why an affordable EV makes a lot. It solves a lot of fucking operating cost problems.
So the car I bought is like the best selling car in Hong Kong, right? And best selling car, best selling brand, and I can absolutely see
it's
why.
It's a BYD. It's a BYD, right?
Yeah. And it's just like to get anything else other than the other Chinese EVs that are going to come in like 2 months or 6 months or whatever. You'd have to spend like, well, I guess a Tesla is a little bit more, right? Tesla is actually not that bad here. But if you wanted to get like a BMW or something, even an EV, it'd be like double the cost, right? It doesn't make any sense. So
does it have the same like sort of like retard level of a Tesla, or is it actually well smartly designed? Because like the Tesla,
there's
a lot
center
of
screen.
Retardation in its
I know.
Design.
Oh, hello?
Did it like, imitate Tesla? Did it go down that route and, sort of computerize everything and make your door locks, door handles weird?
No,
and all that?
It's normal? Most of it's pretty normal. Nice. Like, what is not normal? Like, to be honest, I didn't even test drive the Tesla because I couldn't stand, like, the center screen thing. And I'm not sure
they
if
don't
it's still
do
applied.
You have, like,
they
an,
don't do that.
You actually
there
have an
is
instrument
a center
panel.
Screen. Yeah, but there is an instrument cluster, and there is a heads-up display, and there is like a normal turn signal stock and wiper thing. There's a normal shifter. Like, I think Tesla has that like touchscreen shifter thing. I'm just like, why?
Yeah,
like, some things are just not broken,
Yeah.
And don't need to be fixed. So I think like a lot of the interface on the BYD is like normal, and I was like, I'm already driving right-hand drive on the wrong side of the road. I don't need like another thing to think about. I didn't even test drive the Tesla, to be honest. No, I'm pretty happy with it. Like, it's not perfect, right? There's some like little user interface things I'm not super happy with. The quote unquote autonomous driving is pretty bad. They wouldn't even call it autonomous driving, but like the, whatever sort of assisted driving features are like I would consider to be kind of bad. We don't get like the top version of BYD's autonomous stuff here in Hong Kong. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but it was like,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's very regular grade, but like I had a 2015 Volvo that was better than this car, right? So
that's just lane assist stuff, right? Like
yeah,
that's
it's not like the full autonomous. The just like adaptive cruise, the auto braking and stuff like. Well, yeah. Maybe not better, but like on par, let's say. But it's 2015 versus 2025, right? So, you know.
Do they have like the autonomous taxis yet in Hong Kong?
They do not. They do not. No, there would be a total riot if that happened. The taxi drivers. The
taxi driver union.
Yeah, you know, they recently made it so that they would, by law, have to offer two different kinds of electronic payment in the cab, whereas before it was fully legal for them to only ever take cash, which is insane. Like, just walking around with just that much cash just to pay the cabbie. But, you know, it is a tax dodge, and a lot of them are just kind of like old and very traditional and so on. They don't want to pay the merchant. But that's also why I never really hailed cabs, right? I would always take Uber, just because they didn't have
because of the payment.
Cash.
Because of the payment.
Yeah, just because of the payment. Just because of the payment. And, honestly, like a lot of cabbies, you can order a taxi through Uber, right? But then everything's just like way simpler than actually getting a cab the old-fashioned way. So, yeah.
I kind of feel like. I'm glad, actually, to be honest, I think that's good because, like, New York City, I think, is one of the few street hail cab cities in America.
Is it still dominant? Like, can't you get it on Uber, though?
You know what? I've never seen it. Maybe really? You can, but I've never seen it.
Interesting.
But unlike... You know, I've never tried hailing a cab in any other city. I'm assuming like it's possible in like San Francisco and maybe parts of Chicago,
right?
But like New York City, that used to be, you know, like every movie that took place in New York required a scene where you hailed a cab, right? Like,
right, yeah.
That was it. Was a taxi hailing culture, and that made New York unique, and. That's no longer really the case. Like everyone just calls it Uber now, but everyone right. in the entire fucking world is calling Ubers. So that uniqueness of New York is now gone. It's like not, you know, the ability to go out onto the sidewalk basically at any time and just like, you know, pull just a taxi down with your hand.
With your arm. It's gone.
Yeah. It's gone. Now what's the value of that? Cause obviously that it, you know, when you actually relied on it, it was kind of annoying because you'd have to wait for a while or walk to a main street. But I don't know, man, there's some subjective loss there. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I understand. Cause like you're kind of reliant on you're actually reliant on like a private platform now, right? To provide the service.
And it's also just the same damn thing as every other place. And like, you know, so everyone everywhere is just hailing Ubers all the time around the country, and same in Manhattan, New York. And so there's a subjective, I can't say that that's like a net loss in any like objective way.
Right.
You know, but
right.
I feel a subjective loss in the sense that New York has become just sort of
more
ride,
normal
ride share app, you know, ride. Yeah.
Any you know. Town, it's like any metro. Any
yeah. That's the thing about New York City. It's really losing, in, not totally. I mean, it's never going to totally lose it. But
no,
you know, I think it's a generally global thing too that cities are becoming a lot more appified and therefore alike.
Yes.
And
yes.
People are becoming phonified and therefore also quite alike. I think people are starting to become more. The same.
Somewhat interchangeable.
Somewhat interchangeable. And big city, global cities around the world are becoming interchangeable. You know what I mean? It's kind of sad. But it's true.
Just going back to the cab thing, like in New York, did the cabbies ever, like, were they ever an interest group unto themselves, or did they have like a certain social, did they have like a social reputation? Because like my sense is that the reputation of the cabbies here is that like nobody likes them, right? And they just like nobody likes them, right? But they are considered, they're like a part of society. Was it ever like that in New York, or were cabbies like normal people, or were they?
No. You remember the movie Taxi Driver?
I never saw it. There's so many old
Travis Americana Bickle. No, I mean, I think traditionally New York, before the cabbies basically all became global South immigrants, primarily Indian and Pakistani and some Africans.
Right. Yeah.
Which really then set them apart, and everyone just looked totally down on cabbies, right?
Mm.
They were mostly like sort of lower class working class, European or white or European immigrant, and they had a reputation of being kind of surly and not so honest.
Yeah,
but again, that's part of city life. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that, you know, it's not all fucking rainbows and unicorns, but that is
how a city
regularly
is.
Interacting with people that were of a different social class, like, kept people sharp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
or at least it shows you what reality is, right?
Yeah. You know, you had to deal with a lot of different types of people, and that's the city. But now you can more self-segregate, and you know, when you call an Uber, like,
the you don't talk app,
well, or you do, but you enforce the rating system is a great enforcement mechanism, and so the guy comes and he's got, you know, he's super polite and he's got the passenger chair pulled straight up, and then he's got chargers and candy and water, which is all an improvement. It's all a fucking improvement. But at the same time,
it's somehow like less real in a way.
It's less real, yeah. And New York got New Yorkified in a way.
I know what you mean.
Hong Kong still is all full of those red cabs.
It is all still full of those red cabs. Some of them are like real old. It's very Hong Kong. Like it's a Toyota Crown, and I think
Tokyo, right?
I guess I haven't been to Japan in a long, long time. But I think like some of the cabs are still like a Toyota Crown from not even the 90s. It's from the 80s, like the mid 80s.
Yeah, they're beautiful. The red ones, huh?
I mean, they may be beautiful in a picture, but when you are riding in that thing, it is not a beautiful experience, I tell you. it's like some of them have the bench seat in the front, you know, and the column shifter. So it's like real old stuff, and I wouldn't want to be involved in a crash in any of those things. So there were a couple of generations of those, and I think up until that was still the new taxi. Like, you know, they would produce those and sell them as quote unquote new cars up until about 2015, 2016, and they would sell them, you know, with the full, we were talking about the taxes earlier. They paid the full spate of taxes on those shitty ass cars. So you would buy, like, in 2014 or something, or 2015, you would buy a 20-year-old design, but newly produced Toyota Crown for what would be the equivalent of, like, I don't know, $50,000 US at the time or something. Insane. Absolutely insane, right? Only since then have they started to modernize it. Like, there's this kind of like this London cab-looking thing. It's got, like, a sliding electric door on it, and it's like a hybrid. Oh. Thing's actually pretty good. It's still Toyota. It's still Toyota. I quite like that as a taxi. Just because it's like it's got a really nice rear seat passenger area, and it's got like that electric sliding door, and it's a hybrid, and you know it's got like AC vents in the back and everything. So that thing is like honestly very good.
It's custom designed as a taxi.
It's custom designed as a taxi, exactly. Whereas the other thing was like a 1985 saloon car, like doesn't really do it. And then more lately, there's a BYD sort of electric minivan that's becoming a little bit more popular now. But there's not enough charging, I think. So There's limits on that, and then there's like an even bigger kind of minivan EV from another one of the Chinese manufacturers here. But yeah, these cabbies are, you know, like a lot of people look down on them. I guess I do on some level, but they annoy me on some level, or the experience of the cab annoys me on some level. But I'm also like, look, I know they're miserable. I'm miserable. Everybody in this car is miserable. Like they just kind of, in a way, got dealt a bad lot in life, I think. Right? Like Hong Kong is not a forgiving city.
I feel like it's not always been. I mean, I have very limited. I think I've only taken two cab rides in Hong Kong in my life.
Mm.
And they were both quite pleasant.
really?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I got lucky, or maybe it's because it was 2010. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe.
Both of them, like, I went out for my hotel to go to I forgot where I was going. Oh, Wan Chai.
Okay.
Meeting coworkers in Wan Chai, can you imagine? yeah, it was everything that just came to mind. And the cab, yeah, I remember the cab ride, and the guy was like excited because he was like, oh, because he picked me up from the hotel and he assumed
yeah.
overseas that I was, and he started speaking to me in English and telling me
yeah.
which relatives are in America or Canada and all this stuff.
Yeah.
He was really nice. And I don't know if I was just lucky and that's just how rides in central and business hotels go, or whether Hong Kong has become significantly more miserable over the last 15 years.
That's a good question. Yeah, I used to take a cab almost every day, but it was always Uber, so I never talked to the guys. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I just got the sense that, you know, nobody was really having a good time. It's a rough business, especially because, like, I think a lot of them bought, like, the medallions for ridiculous amounts of money, right? And then Uber came in.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. And then Uber comes in, and then, you know, the economy goes a little bit worse. And they probably lost.
How did Uber accomplish this all over the world? Every city, I mean, that's rough because, like, the cabby union, you know, has official status. And the cabbies are not, you know, they're like you said, they're surly people.
They are.
How did this one company go around the world and just intrude on protected space like that? It's crazy.
I mean, I think this is.
And just dominate.
This is like real business, like street level, pay off the right people and, you know, muscle your way in kind of business. Not the kind of stuff that I'm normally used to be entirely honest. I'm kind of an office worker.
You know how Uber tried to go into China?
Oh, they got muscled out. Yeah,
they got muscled out.
They got out like business. Actually, I find like a lot of you know, when Chinese people talk about investing, they mean it in a much more nuts and bolts, on the ground, businessy kind of way. Like they're talking about investing almost in the sense that you would, like, two guys in 18th century England would be talking about investing, right? Like in America, you talk about investing, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to buy some S&P ETF, or I'm going to buy some like double levered NVIDIA, or I'm going to buy some like some treasury futures or something. It's like much more abstract. It's like this kind of...
Well, it's all been securitized.
It's all been securitized, and it's been like wrapped up. It's like it's been wrapped in multiple layers, and it's actually gotten into the culture, right? Whereas I think in China, it's still like, yeah, I'm going to pick like this coffee shop to invest in because my buddy's running it or something. It's just a much more bricks and mortars thing. And I think that extends all the way to like corporate things. Like Didi probably just out-muscled, out-localized and out-muscled and out kind of business Uber, right? So,
you know, I can't deal with that shit. I mean, it's what, like again, it's another one of those things where that's probably like a purer form of like capital investment is like,
I think it
actually
is
thinking about an operating business.
Yeah, I think it is.
But like,
I think it is.
Dude,
no,
the other day,
no, we're too soft. We're too soft. Like, we can't do that.
No,
you and I. Well, I'll speak for myself. I can't do that. I can't do that.
No, the other day, I remember we bought some shares of Berkshire, which are like, you know, the post Buffett dip. You know, buy the dip. And So Shan's been following the stock now that we have a vested interest in it. And she was like telling me whatever news is associated with it. She's like, do you know they're going to buy a pest control company? I was like, yeah, I you know, I'm sure at somewhere in Omaha, someone came up with a really solid thesis as to why a pest control company is a good buy. But like, that's too nuts and bolts for me. Like, how can someone sit around and make those decisions? Like,
right,
we should buy a pest control company. It's too close to actual human activity.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I just want to stay in the charts. I want to stay in the charts.
Yes. Yeah, you want to stay in the charts and the spreadsheets, right?
Like, yeah, I want to live in the commanding heights where I just mobilize digits.
You don't want to like actually have to check on the inventory of which pesticide they still have or which insecticide they still have in inventory. Right.
Yeah. Or what environmental factors are leading to increased pestilence, you know?
Yeah. Or like, you know, how are some of these cockroach reports forged or something? It's very, I probably sound ridiculous because I'm making this up because I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to like a pest control company. But if you want to price some derivatives, I'm your man.
One of the Discord trashmen was talking about like reviewing CMBS deals on the basis of like numbers of shootings per property. That dude is nitty gritty. He's down. Yeah, he's out visiting sites. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Undercover. No, like, see,
this is like vertical integration because it's like, yeah, shootings per area or whatever, but also CMBS, right? That's like both high and low sophistication. I love it, actually.
But you know, okay, so my job puts me at that brink of securitization, right? Because I'm reviewing, like the actual. That's how I started out, was doing securitizations, and those documents, you know, the meat of the sausage is in those documents, like.
Right.
We used to do, you know what we used to do? The most egregious form of, I guess it's a form of securitization, were mortality swaps, in which a life insurance company and a pension would swap mortality risk.
Yeah.
Because they're opposite way. And the document was centered around what it called, what did it call it? It wasn't called liquidation events. It was called some like, something really, you know, like reference asset event.
Oh, so very, right. Very like abstract.
Abstract. And so I was like, okay, well, that's interesting because everything hinged on this. I was like, what's a reference asset event? And it was like, you know, they kept burying the word dies in like a layer of, defined terms.
Yeah, because you can't have like a derivative on death, right? That's like, that's a bad look.
Right. And I was like, okay, well, what's a reference asset? And it said reference assets are as listed in exhibit, you know, C or whatever. So I'd say, oh, where's exhibit C? I open up exhibit C. I'm like, there it is. It's just pages and pages of names and birth dates and social security numbers and all this stuff. And I'm like, there it is.
Yeah.
That's the sausage that we're rolling up, you know.
Yeah. But that's all. That's all legally material, right? It's all that's the asset. That's literally the
asset. That's the asset. Yeah, and it rolled up into an asset reference asset event maturity event. I think they call it a reference asset maturity event.
This is like very much, you know, if you imagine capitalism as like this tower, right? And at the lower levels of the tower, you have like real street level actual business. Right. This guy's on like pretty close to the top. Like this mortality swap is like in the upper third of the building.
Yeah.
In terms of how many layers you got to build to get up there.
It's a 50-story building. Yeah. I'm on level 3 or 2.
Yeah.
Right. Like the guy downstairs is like walking the corpses up the stairs to me. And I'm like, okay, put him in exhibit C, guys.
Takes a long time to get to the top there.
I'm comfortable that I'm just going to have been a low-level mook in all of this because I don't want to get too high. I like staying close to the ground.
So how is I've been meaning to ask because, you know, I've been out here like 2 years now. Like, how is life in America lately? Because watching it from afar, it seems like I know you'll hate this, but by the numbers looks mostly okay. But spiritually, how's it feeling spiritually? Like, is it are people okay, or like there was a period where people were like fucking panicking. I don't know. Like, if Trump got elected, there's Liberation Day, all this other, you know, like intense xenophobia or whatever. And now has it passed? Are people over, or is it just like I've paid less attention to it, or what?
It's weird, man. I was thinking about this exact question the other day. Because the weather has been fantastic the last few days, so Shannon and I have gone out we're taking full advantage of this. So right after work, we go out to some beautiful park and have a picnic and watch the sunset. It's very nice. A lot of people out. You know, it's a good time in the city. It's festive. The restaurants are full. Like, there's life. It's not a depressed city at all. It's very much alive. So they're like, if we're on the ground and I'm in like the real world, you know, it feels great, right? Of course, I'm in New York City. I don't know. I can't say that generally. But, you know, we've traveled. Like, we've gone to the, you know, and everywhere. We don't, you know, and I go down to D.C. and we go to the countryside. We went to Montana. Okay, maybe that's not a great swath of the United States. Okay, but everything feels great. But the second you turn to the media and online, it sounds like the country is about to fall off a cliff, or is in the process of falling off a cliff. And it may very well be falling off a cliff. I think there's probably real reason. I don't think it's all bullshit. So I would, you know, that I think it's a cliche now, but this, you know, when Wile E. Coyote runs off the cliff and it doesn't, you know. Okay, fine. But like, how long is he going to hang in the air for? Because we've been told that for going on a fucking decade now. And COVID was supposed to crash us, and this was was supposed to fucking crash us, and we're not crashing.
Yeah.
Things are getting bubbly and a little tight, but
they never stay down very long.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say, long answer short, there is the sort of media online view of the United States, which is dire. And then there's the real world experience of the United States, which, at least from my perspective so far, is not that bad. I know things are tough for people in terms of rent, expenses, jobs, stuff like that. But honestly, I don't know anyone that can't find a job.
Right.
Everyone I know is able to find work. So
right.
Maybe it's just, you know, Matt, I don't have a lot of really young friends or whatever, but.
Well, I mean, only from afar and only by the numbers, the unemployment rate's been pretty low for a while.
It has.
So it's, I think a lot of the numbers are at like generational highs or lows or goods. They're generational goods. This thing you bring up about the internet, something I keep thinking about is, like, if you go back to 2015, 2016, before Trump even won the primary, I feel like at the time it wasn't clear that he was going to win or that he even had a shot.
In fact, you're talking about the second round? You're talking about Trump 2 or Trump 1?
Trump 1, like 2015. Oh. Like, even before the primary, right? Like, you know, people still treated him like a clown. And I think they treated him kind of like a clown in both Meatspace and on the mainstream media. But I remember distinctly, like, if you were on just social media, there was a lot more sympathy for, like, say, a Trumpian viewpoint from a lot of people. So, like, I wouldn't necessarily discount the value of that social media signal. Right, like, why did Nate Silver get so fucked up in 2016 when it was Trump versus Hillary? Yeah. Right,
like Hillary he was dismissing that stuff.
Was dismissing that stuff as just like a bunch of randos on on Reddit or whatever. Yeah, and you know, he was like, he's putting faith in his polls and faith in his modeling, and it's completely wrong. So I kind of wonder now, like, if we are seeing something similar, well, firstly, it's kind of like, well, don't discount the internet. But on the other hand, it feels a little bit like the internet has gone way off the rails. Like, I don't know if it's just because there's too many bots now, or if the engagement farming technologies and skills in the world have gotten so strong that it has moved the internet to be a, you know, much more removed from reality. Like, it's not really people's innermost thoughts anymore. It's like,
oh no,
you know, it's kind of like too extreme for that.
It's occupied territory for sure. Like it was formerly, I think, just 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it was Wild Wild West.
Yeah,
you know, like I think the vested powers were like, I mean, the internet's the internet, but we control NBC, we control CNN, we control Fox News, right? Like,
right, yeah.
We control New York Times. Like, this is just fringe internet. Now, I think the story has gone well past, oh, the internet is actually very powerful and influential.
The internet is now the mainstream.
To now where it's like, wait, fuck it. Our cable news TV is worth a shit.
Yeah.
We have to go colonize the internet, and I think that's what they're doing.
So you think it's Palantir?
Like, that's why Palantir, I think, is such a big deal.
What does that company actually do? I actually don't know.
They're basically like data
engineering for government.
They're eavesdropping company. They're online mass surveillance.
But is it mass surveillance in the sense of just like, yeah, we just throw all your data into this thing and we got a bunch of people who are like cleaning it, and it's just like a big data company with a NatSec sheen on it, or is it actually like we'll wiretap you?
Well, no, I mean,
I think
it's
that, right? Like, that's a
huge I don't think it's that they have such great tech and they can go out and, I mean, I think what they are is that they've become very tightly coupled with the U.S. government.
Sure, yeah.
And through that very powerful relationship, Palantir is essentially like, you know, a defense contractor at this point, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think Silicon Valley is like Anduril, and as you can see, like Google and Microsoft, like they all have large government consulting arms that we don't really know about.
Right.
Right. Which is why the employees And you know, a lot of them protest because they're like, they know about it. We just don't know about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what's going on is a Palantir. Like, what are they? They're just a private. They're just a government contractor that is responsible for doing online surveillance for the government as on a contract basis. You know, so they're an extension of the intelligence world, and they you know, because they're allied with the government, they have you know, all the backdoor keys, right? And because Meta is working with the government and Google is working with the government,
right,
you know, the government has all the backdoor keys, and so I think that's Palantir's strength, is probably that they basically are given access to data that no other company has access to.
And so then you need some people to like scrub it, so.
Yeah, but that's easy now. You can use off-the-shelf tools these days.
Right? Yeah, right. Scrub it and kind of make the connection. So they're like the analysis division.
The analysis division, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, okay.
I think they're taking, like, NSA is probably becoming a niche. They're niche now, you know what I mean? Like, Palantir is probably going to become the
workhorse,
shove them to
the
side. It's going to be all Palantir. That's why their stock is probably... So,
yeah.
Shit. Maybe Palantir stock isn't a bubble. Maybe it's worth buying. Once it collapses, buy it.
I think let's say government spending doesn't look like it's you know, gonna abate, not in a serious way. Neither party is serious about controlling the deficit. Right? Like they're just arguing over where to spend it and whose fault it is. But they don't want to spend.
Have you heard that the French and UK finance ministers are like, yeah, we may have to apply for an IMF bailout?
I have heard this, and I find it absolutely ludicrous.
That is so
crazy. It is actually ludicrous. Like, this is not, guys, this is not how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. Dude, the core EU state cannot be going for a fucking IMF bailout, okay?
Yeah, like, this doesn't, like, how did, it defies economic logic. Like, the whole thing was for the countries that had the reserve currency to bail out the countries that did not.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah. So we're talking about the British pound and the euro.
Yeah. It's actually ridiculous.
Yeah. It's are becoming sort of like, you know, third world currencies.
Third world, like, yeah, quote unquote normal currencies.
Yeah.
Where you have to, like, watch your spending and stuff like that. You know, realistically, only, I guess, like, the Gulf countries or something could bail them out or whatever. But in terms of, like, which countries could act as a reserve to anchor that thing, you know. Yeah, there's only the U.S. could bail them out. Probably not going to. So, why would you? Why would you?
That might be, I mean, that might be the scenario where the U.S. really starts to let it go, is a desperate attempt. I mean, maybe this is why we need a Trump, you know, why we need, in Europe, we need the alternative parties. Is left to their own devices, the liberal world order will just print. They'll do whatever it takes to keep it together, including and then the path to ruin would be total debasement of your money.
I feel like so certainly I feel this in Canada.
A great job, but yeah,
that you know, the elites, the Canadian elites, have lost any sense of Canadianness, and they kind of, in their hearts, want to be American elites, right? Like, they is not a great example because she's not Canadian, but like Ursula von der Leyen, right? Like, you just know in her heart, she just wants to be American, right? Or wants to be a good partner to America. She's not really thinking about the interests of Europe as a entity, and I think it's some level the same for Canada as well, right? Like, they'll fight a little bit, but at the end of the day, they kind of all in their hearts want to be American because there's nowhere else to go, right? Like, there's no kind of national spirit at that elite level anymore. Like, you know, Mark Carney's kid goes to Harvard, right? And I think
so did Xi Jinping's.
Well, yeah, I know, but that was a okay. I'm not sure you want to know. It's a different matter.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure, like, von der Leyen's kids live in the U.S. if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think I've heard something like that. So, but then if you think about, like, the regular people, right? And I think this is much more true of Europe now than it is of Canada. Have a much stronger sense of national identity. Like, I think if you ask, like, the median German or median Frenchman or whatever, or median Italian, they're really like, no, like, we're Italian first. And so you can see the rise of these nationalist parties, right, which have probably a lot more grassroots and elite support, because the elites all just fucking want to be American. That's all they want to do, right?
Well, the funny thing about what you're saying is that that's kind of true here in America, but we're so confused about it because I think we have the similar sort of nationalist versus internationalist, globalist type mindset, but but then what would you say about us? Cause you're like, there's those who want, cause we're talking about America first. And the globalist types are like, I am America first. That's why we got to defend Israel. Like, but everyone's claiming to be America first. Whereas in Europe, at least it's very clear, Italy over Europe. In Canada, it's clear. It's like Canada over America. But here, it's like, who's more American? Us? Or
these other Americans?
Right? So, like, I think that's the confusion for us. I mean, I find the idea that, you know, you want to assert French interests or UK interests above EU, European interests to be very clear and obvious. Mm-hmm. But for us here in America, it's less clear. Like, what counts as America first and what counts as whatever the fuck the alternative to that is, which is clearly
I think there's like a there's a very lively debate, it seems like, in I almost don't want to say America, because let's say the West even, about what is that, you know, what is America's interest? Is there not? Like, it seems to me on some level that, like, the most lively and viable and active kind of intellectual realm today is, for lack of a better term, anti-liberalism. Only in the sense that, we should only call it this because liberalism is a default. And people seem to be unhappy with it, so therefore they are against it, but it's not exactly clear what the alternative is either. Right, so there kind of is that live debate, is there not?
There is, and I think that's why Trump, in a populist role, sort of has to lean a little bit into like a white nationalist identity, because in order to create that sense of American interest first, you have to define, like you said, you have to define it.
Yeah, you can't just define it as not liberalism, right?
Yeah. No, they say that, like, Steve Bannon will be like, it's very simple, American citizens. You're like, well, that's the first cut, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The first cut is let's close the gates to immigration. That's the first cut. And then the second cut is let's start redefining, like, what's proper citizenship, because they want to take away naturalized – they want to have the right to revoke naturalized citizenship. So they'll be like, okay, for anyone who naturalized and then commits a crime – We're gonna strip you of
citizenship or whatever.
Citizenship and deport you to CECOT in El Salvador. They're like, yeah, but I'm Chinese. Yeah, but you're going to CECOT. So like, that you could start seeing, I think, where there's going to be cuts. And I think, to an extent, I think American people will probably support. I voted for Trump for foreign policy reasons, but like, they'll probably support Trump and Trumpism, but if it succeeds, I think you'll see a successive amount of door closing, and you're going to get closer and closer to, like, you know, closer and closer to whatever sort of what's the term, like indirect,
like a stable
factors? Like things that don't necessarily say white but heavily infer that that's what you need to be.
Like correlated.
Yeah,
like dog whistle factors or whatever.
Dog whistle stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I hear you. I hear you. But I think, like, it's kind of like, this doesn't even need to be something nefarious. Although I would not suggest that there is nothing nefarious. I hope I'm getting my double negatives right about Steve Bannon. If you think, like, okay, well, we have this thing called liberalism, okay, and it has a certain set of tenets, whether, you know, however well or not executed they are. And if people are happy with that and they want to replace it with something else, but they're not sure what, well, you know, society can simply go into this process of searching for some kind of stable socio-political coalition of something that can create an alternative. White nationalism can very much be that stable coalition, right? There's a certain gravity to things that will politically work. So I actually think it's entirely possible that it goes down this way, right? And that
I see it happening already. I mean, what do you think these ICE raids are all about? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know it's the internet, but some of the way I find that it is, like, if you read the ICE or DHS Twitter account, it's like, what the fuck is going on here? You know what I mean? It's like, but like in real life.
What you're seeing is the switch to a populist rhetoric in the age of the internet. So what you're seeing this is what populism looks like, except it's jilting to us because we don't typically see populist rhetoric. And then what's especially jilting about it is now that we see it, it's reflecting online.
Online, it's memified.
It's memified.
Yeah,
and they're smart. They're smart to use that because they're like, that's what populism is. Yeah,
yeah.
And this the whole administration's, like, sort of political management team, you know, his political handlers, his, you know, whoever the David Axelrod of Trump is, whether it's Stephen Miller or Bannon in the shadows, or I don't know, all these people, they understand this. Whether it's Kristi Noem or Laura Loomer or whatever the fuck, you know. By the way, you know Trump is dead. You know he died, right? No, apparently we haven't seen him in 3 days. What? No one's seen him in 3 days.
This is like the Xi Jinping news of we haven't seen him in 3 days. He must be dead.
Yeah, but it's except it's real in the sense that people here are getting freaked about it. There are physical signs of there have been really strange, like visible problems with him. Like he's got this like bruising on his hand that you know is a very. It's definitely a symptom of a number of serious conditions, including a number of not very serious ones, but
okay,
you know, some very serious ones. And he has these red, swollen eyes that were almost like did not look normal. Like he looked like a fish, like a fish that's been dead for a while. He's had these red, watery, swollen eyes, and then he can't walk. So when he went to meet Putin in Alaska, there's a video of him walking on the, he had a red carpet and he was like, he was rolling around it like a fucking, you know, bowling ball in an earthquake or something. It was really weird. And so there's all this speculation now that he's dead and
is Biden going to outlast Trump?
Well, you know what? We haven't heard from Biden in a long time either. So
that's true too.
Who knows where
that's
he is. I think if Trump dies, I think we should definitely go Stalin Mao style, where we like taxidermy him and then display him in the rotunda of the Capitol for 100 to 200 years.
Donald's mausoleum.
I think that's what we'll do, actually. It might be his will.
J.D. Vance is.
Could happen. I mean, and J.D. Vance has been talking about succession plans. It's really weird. He gave an interview where he's like, I'm fully capable of serving, you know, if needed or whatever. Like, that motherfucker killed the Pope. Like, is he killing our president? You know what I mean? Is he working? I mean, honestly, things are so weird in America. This is where I'm saying, like, all right, let's skip the sunsets and picnics, right? Let's go straight into the belly of the beast. It's like, this country's so fucking weird with the pedophile rings and shit. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised if J.D. Vance is working with Laura Loomer to like poison Trump or something. You know, like, so, who knows? Who the fuck knows what's going on with these people? I don't know.
Is it so on this J.D. Vance stuff? Is this just a somewhat play devil's advocate, right? Simply engagement farming technology to keep you distracted, right? Because on some level, it feels like sometimes nothing ever happens.
Distracted from what, though?
I don't know. Anything. It just the people require entertainment. Here's some entertainment. Here's some wonderful entertainment. Imagine if fucking Trump died. Shit. And then 3 days later, it's like, no, it's fine. Just to get you over another week.
But why would we need to see that? Why would we need to see that? I don't think the American people need to see that.
I mean, this could be all sorts of reasons. Or it could be anything. Who knows? Like, if nothing, if it does, like, if it's just a lie, who cares, right? You can be inured to all sorts of crazy stuff. I do think that's kind of true, actually. The degree to which people are inured to all the crazy shit that's going on. And they just kind of go about their lives because it's nothing is shocking anymore, and on some level, nothing ever happens.
I think the problem with America is, to some extent, is also like it's a pretty naive country, right? Like the population is pretty naive, and we're really sheltered and insulated. I mean, we're suburban people, and you know we live in Targets and Starbucks. We live in suburban tract homes and, you know, we have left turn lanes, you know, whatever. Right.
And but at the same time, this country is also engaged in some really deep shit, like supporting a genocide, arming a war in which it might be the case that over, like, well over a million people have died in 3 years, right? That's like World War II level fucking death, right? Mm-hmm. In Europe. So I feel like we're starting to deal with forces like beyond our imagination. And I wonder if that naivety is going to get us killed, because does Trump really know what he's dealing with? Like, does he know what Putin is and what this war is? Like, does he have a real grasp on this? Because I feel like he's just like, he had a meeting recently with Jared Kushner and Tony Blair. Tony Blair, about post-Gaza, post-war plans for Gaza. And
what's
I'm
Tony Blair
sure,
got to do with that?
I don't know. But I'm pretty sure Jared Kushner and Trump were mostly thinking about real estate. Right? They're mostly thinking about, like, okay, what you know, he's probably thinking, like, okay, what are the environmental hurdles to putting up a bunch of condos? You know? Like, does he, like, that's the kind of thing. It's like this naivety, American naivety, bumping up against sort of like deep, deep world, like biblical shit. I think we're going to get rat fucked if we do that.
Is there not something, like, if I think about this, right, like, you know, something horrible happening, but we're thinking about the aftermath and we're thinking about putting up condos. Like, is the issue here really just that Trump is not going through the motions of presidency? Because after every war, there's always somebody thinking about business. There's all, like, somebody's always doing that, right? But in this case, it's just Trump is just like, yeah, okay, I'm also the one thinking about business, right? He's not doing the ritual of solemnity.
Okay, but almost a century ago, 80 years ago, you know, with the Marshall Plan and everything, it was like smart. It was actually an intelligent reconstruction, and we knew. I feel like we were actually up to the task, right? Like we understood the moment in history well, and our mindset was up for the challenge. Whereas now we're just a bunch of, like, you know, morons, basically. Right? And we're on the wrong side. I mean, at least in World War II, we were fighting the Nazis. Here we are, you know, we are the Nazis, right? So, like, literally, I mean, with Ukraine, like, with the Azov and shit, they're, like, flying their Nazi tattoo. They're, like, they have Nazi tattoos, they have Nazi flags. I mean, come on, they're Banderites. So, here we're on the wrong fucking side of history. We don't even know it, or we do and we don't care. And then on top of that, we got fucking idiots. It's like, not only are we on the wrong side, but we're morons. And so I get this feeling, man, like, you know, I don't think anything good's going to come out of it. I think Trump's in over his head. I think a lot of Americans are in over their head with this. I don't know who's really up to the task.
What would you see as the potential, I don't know, what's the blowback on the ground in America? Is there any?
I don't know, but I feel like there are forces moving in. We could see it now. There is some sort of fucking, there is some sort of, like, you know, in, not, I don't mean invisible in like a ghost way. I mean, invisible from the public eye. There definitely are very powerful invisible forces, underground forces, that control our government in a way that the democratic process does not. And people are starting to perceive this. And then I think the first move now that the people are starting to see this and become very angry about it, is to Jewify it and say it's the Jews. That's what's going to happen. That's what I see happening. And it's like, okay, well, when it's the Jewish state that's committing a genocide, you're not going to get a lot of people with a conscience to give a shit about you saying that. Right? Because then it's like, okay, well, then I have to flip sides and what? Speak up on behalf of the Jew of Israel? No, I'm not going to do that. So the door is open to some pretty awful, heinous shit now that... Yeah.
There's a shift.
I don't know, man.
There's a shift.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't want to get... this is just a lot to talk about, but like, do you know, like, in Chinese history and culture, there's a lot of talk about sort of like teasing out, I don't have great examples of this, but like teasing out like how history progresses. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe pertinent to like Sangor, maybe like dynastic history, there are these ideas that come out about, you know, like for example, like, oh, well, maybe that's not a great example, but like, you know, how wealth and power can't last past generations or whatever. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things like that. And I feel like that's happening in the U.S. Like we are coming upon some tripping up we're coming on a historical tripwire where I think we're letting, by making like one big wrong move, we are snowballing and we're making other wrong moves to try and cover up that last wrong move.
Could you see it being, I don't know, like I don't know Americans that well, so. But could you see there being some kind of societal reflex on the same level as like post-Vietnam or during the Vietnam War or the Civil Rights Movement or something like
worse than that. Yeah, worse than that. I think worse. Because I think with Vietnam and stuff, like we were I think there was There was a clear, what's the difference? I don't think we were quite as lost as we are now. And you had what I think were people that had like a principled basis to do what they, like the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, built on solid principles.
Yeah.
But now I don't know if there's such a thing because like now, because once you're like on the fucking absolute wrong side of something, but it's the, I mean, I'm not saying we're on the right side of Vietnam. What I'm trying to say is when it comes to the moral question right now, which is, these wars, in particular the genocide in Gaza, is that I think the only proper solution to this in terms of getting the Israeli influence off our back will absolutely open the door to like fascist anti-Semitism. That's the only operational motivation.
Yeah. I could see it. Yeah, no, I hear you. Like it feels like.
We're not going to act on good instincts.
This is only reading from afar, right? But it feels like people kind of care about this on some level, right? But they there is expression of opposition to America's support for Israel and the current war in Gaza, but it still feels like it's being restrained and held back. Whether actively or even, you know, by the people who otherwise would go out on the street and protest, and they're holding themselves back on some level, it feels like, right? But if that were to explode or boil over somehow, right? Like in the way that I think it did during the Vietnam protests or during the civil rights movement, it could get real nasty, right? Like I think somebody posted this in the Discord, but it was something along the lines of like, if you voted for MAGA, and then you were told that like by the person you voted for that American interests are Israeli interests, you would have some questions. Right? And I'm like, you probably would. Just on the semantics of it.
This is the end of part one of a two-part podcast. The second part will be on the Patreon feed. If you want to support Planet Mag and get access to bonus pods, go to patreon.com/PlanAMAC.